Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll get local reaction from tipped workers here on the shore, who just realized that the small print in the recently passed minimum wage hike in Maryland will not include their hourly pay. We'll also analyze the other last-minute changes to the minimum wage bill that some say will help coastal businesses stay afloat in the years to come. But first, let's look at the entirety of the 2014 legislative session in Annapolis. And to do that, we'll touch base with WAMU's Maryland reporter, Matt Bush, who joins me now from our studios in Washington. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure to be on.
So the legislative sessions in the past few years have been defined or perhaps remembered by the passage of some of Governor Martin O'Malley's biggest initiatives, such as same-sex marriage or offshore wind or even gun control. For you, what's the big ones this year? Many people are pointing to the minimum wage bill that I just mentioned in the opening, as well as decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. Do you think that's a fair assessment of how this session will be remembered?
Absolutely. Those were the two top ticket items that did end up getting passed. There was also, of course, all the drama with the House of Cards tax credits issue, which I think some people, particularly the reporters, are going to remember just watching it fall apart in the last night that we got a front row seat to it. But certainly the minimum wage, that was Governor O'Malley's last victory in his 8 years in office. It didn't quite come out the way, or it didn't come quite to the level of what he was looking for when he initially proposed the bill. What was passed was a compromise, and then probably the truest sense and the truest form of the word of all the things that came out in that bill. And decriminalization of marijuana, this is something we're going to see in preceding years. We're going to see more next year. We're going to see a lot of push about legalization. Decriminalization really came there was an evolution with the governor on this issue. He signed the bill this week, and right after it passed on the final day, just minutes afterwards, the final day of the session, he put out a statement saying he was going to sign the bill after being very, very vague throughout the entire session on whether he would support decriminalization. He's been very against legalization right now, but was very vague about decriminalization on the first day of the session. He used the term, I'm not inclined to support it, but that certainly gave him a lot of wiggle room on the issue that he ended up coming to a different conclusion by the time the session ended in April.
Let's talk about the governor for a second, because, you know, you and I, in our conversations in past years, looking at legislative sessions, we keep talking and using this term, O'Malley has earned another feather in his cap. As he looks back over the course of his tenure, do you think that he has enough feathers in his cap and he has amassed enough large initiatives to move forward and have a real play for a presidential campaign?
Few parts to the answer. First, obviously, like any Democrat that's looking at running in 2016, it really depends on whether Hillary Clinton decides to run. And I think if she decides to run, that really kind of knocks a lot of people out of the possible Democratic field, including the governor. If she does not and he is looking at running, you know, he has passed quite a bit during his tenure in Maryland that would look good in a Democratic primary to Democratic voters. Gun control, same-sex marriage, the hike in the minimum wage. Even now, this decriminalization bill that he signed this week, that some that he was very, you know, very vague about, now supporting and signing it, those are things that are really going to help him. I think what hurts him the most, and I really think, to me, this is one that's really, really, really going to hurt him, was something that happened during the session, but it had nothing to do with what lawmakers were doing in Annapolis, and that's the failure of the health exchange to the point that they're now going to use the state of Connecticut's exchange. I really think in a national sense, that hurts Governor O'Malley the most. Say he were to run in a Democratic primary, you would think every one of his opponents would be quick to remind him and remind Democratic voters that are very supportive of the Affordable Care Act that Maryland had to ditch its own state-run website before any other state did. It was the first state to have to do this and ended up taking another state's website to use instead. I think that would really, really, you know, all of his opponents would hang that on him at every opportunity they would get.
That's a great point. Let's actually switch aisles for a second, because we always hear in Maryland about this huge majority that Democrats have. And last year, many analysts thought that the Republican Party left Annapolis sort of licking their wounds, so to speak, as many of the bills they fought so hard against passed anyway. Will Republicans leave Annapolis this year feeling better that they got more of their initiatives farther down the line?
They got a few victories on the minimum wage bill, so the governor didn't quite get everything he wanted. Now, going into this session, both chambers had new Republican leadership, Nick Kipke in the House and David Brinkley in the Senate. Now, Brinkley had previously served as the Senate leader, but ended up taking it over again after E.J. Pipkin resigned over between the two sessions in coming into this one. So they were a little more, particularly in the House, Nick Kipke was going to be a little more of a hardline Republican, a little more conservative maybe than the prior leadership, and they really were going to fight for some things. Now, again, they did score a few victories on the minimum wage, but in the end, it still ended up getting passed. I think if they look back at their biggest defeat in this is that they really didn't get any changes to the rain tax that they were just campaigning against all throughout the months prior up to the session. And this was Republicans of all feathers, the moderate wing and the conservative wing. Really, all of them were putting the rain tax in their sights to try to repeal that, and it didn't go anywhere during this session. So that was probably their biggest defeat. Where this goes from here on out, it's an election year. We're going to see there are some delegates on the other side that are on the Republican side that are running for Senate. Should they get over to the Senate, we'll see what happens there. So what happens in the future with the Republican Party really depends on what happens in this upcoming election, because it's much like the National Party right now, there's a fight brewing between the moderate and conservative wings, and that's the same here in Maryland.
Certainly what we've heard the Republicans speaking about very vehemently and passionately in the past several months, in addition to the rain tax, is also Common Core. There were a couple in education initiatives that moved forward. Tell me a little bit about the Common Core one, and then speak briefly about the pre-K expansion.
Common Core, the Republicans, again, were trying to repeal that as well, and that didn't really go anywhere. So there's little minor tweaks here and there to some of these things. The pre-K expansion, that was something that the governor and his endorsed successor for to be governor, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. They were very big on the expansion of pre-kindergarten programs. So those went through. I'm going to say they're not big changes. They are changes. They are things that will change, but they're not big changes to what's going on. And I think if we're going to see anything really substantial change in education, it's going to depend on who the next governor is, and in many ways will depend on who the next president of the United States is, since there's so much federal education policy that comes down to the states.
Let's turn to the shore for a minute, because there's a proposed multi-million dollar wind farm in Somerset County that has been a huge topic of debate here on the shore. But there also seems to be an implication that the governor may chime in on this issue and actually do something he's never done before in his tenure as governor. Tell me a little bit about this.
This bill would delay that project off of Somerset County for another 13 months while studies are finished about whether these windmills would have any effect on the radar at the Patuxent Naval Air Station, which is on the other side of the Chesapeake Bay. And the studies have started already, and supporters of the wind farm project, particularly Governor Malley, who has been very passionate about wind power during his time as governor, have said all the important questions about whether this will affect the radar have already been answered. So there's no need to delay this any further. Now, there was also a protest during the final days of the session where a couple of farmers from Somerset County came in tractors that were decorated with windmills, and the head of the Farm Bureau for Somerset County was there and was very impassioned to say that, you know, Somerset County really needs the jobs right now, saying that it's underdeveloped. There's been some recent job losses in the county in Salisbury, that they need more economic development, and they viewed this wind farm as something that could certainly help with that. These aren't sides that would particularly support each other on something. Governor O'Malley very big at looking at this through the environmental aspect of this, and these people looking at it, that certainly I'm sure a lot of people weren't voting for Governor O'Malley in Somerset County, but they like this because they see the economic impact to them would be positive. And right now the governor is saying he is considering vetoing this bill that would delay it for 13 months. He's not vetoed a bill in his 8 years in office. So interesting to see what will happen here. There's something else that could happen. If he just doesn't sign it by the end of May, the bill would go into effect anyway. But he could also say, I didn't sign this. It's not necessarily a veto. It's more of a symbolic thing. But it would still go into effect. So he still has about a little more than a month to decide whether or not he's going to veto this bill. It's very interesting. In the 8 years, this would be the one thing that would end up getting vetoed, is just this bill. And the supporters of this say it doesn't stop the project. It just delays it for another 13 months while the studies can be completed.
Interesting. You know, we're going to be seeing a lot of political posturing heading towards November. Now that the session has wrapped and people are really going to start focusing on campaigning full time. You know, it was interesting. This past weekend, I was in Berlin for the Coolest Small Town in America party, and Governor O'Malley had sent an audio postcard of sorts congratulating the town. But another person who actually came there was Doug Gansler, Attorney General, going to be running for governor. And he sort of took a few subtle jabs at O'Malley, saying that he wanted to be there in person. He didn't want to just, you know, phone in a congratulations. There was also another interesting exchange between one of the matchups that is really going to be close, and that's between State Senator Jim Mathias and current Republican delegate Mike McDermott. You know, a lot of people are looking at this race is really a good gauge for just the political climate of the shore, whether it's more liberal or whether it's extremely conservative. Tell me what you think the next few months are going to look like.
Looking at things throughout the state right now, that's one of two Senate races where Republicans do have a chance of knocking a Democrat out and picking up a few seats in the Senate, trying to get to a level where they could at least begin to be able to stop some things, parliamentary sort of stoppages. They would have enough numbers at least to force debate that they wouldn't allow debate to be end, maybe be able to do some filibuster things. So they do have a chance to pick up two seats. Senator Mathias is one. The other is Senator Brochin in the Baltimore suburbs, where Republicans do have a chance. Those would be really probably the two elections, I would say right now, that in the general election in November will be very, very competitive. So much of Maryland right now, since it's such a Democratic state, we look at the governor's election, you know, whomever wins the Democratic primary, and that is going to be the very, very heavy favorite to win the general election. Statewide, obviously, the Democratic primary will be very big right now. The lieutenant governor continues to hold his lead, but now that the session's over, there was no fundraising during the session, and campaigning went on, but it wasn't as full bore as it's going to be now. We'll see what happens, especially with this switch over of the health exchange from Maryland's to Connecticut. Doug Gansler has continued to go after that. He put out an internal poll this week that showed him within single digits of the lieutenant governor now. Of course, that's an internal poll, so that has to be taken with a grain of salt. But we'll see what happens. I think, you know, the primary election will be very big, but the Eastern Shore, there is one general election contest right there between Senator Mathias and Delegate McDermott. And Delegate McDermott was very vocal in a lot of issues this session. He always usually is, but this session he really seemed to step up, and a lot of press releases about things that Senator Mathias supported that he didn't. There was a lot of that. So obviously, he's thinking he can get that victory and get into the Senate. And for Republicans who have had a rough 4 years right now, that's a possibility that they could pick up a few seats in the Senate and make things at least a little tighter for Democrats as they try to push an agenda in the next 4 years.
We've been speaking to Matt Bush. He's the Maryland reporter for WAMU 88.5 News in Washington. Matt, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Sometimes we forget that many of the headline-grabbing laws that are passed in Annapolis or respective state houses throughout the country impact everyday people's lives. Sometimes for the good, other times not so much. When news of the aforementioned provisions in the minimum wage bill broke, such as the one that will freeze the current wages of tipped employees in Maryland to $3.73 an hour, there were a number of people working as bartenders or waitresses here on the coast who were less than thrilled. It's no secret that the restaurant industry and many large business owners here on the coast lobbied hard to get those last-minute provisions put in the bill. In addition, establishments that gross less than $400,000 annually are exempt from the bill, and amusement parks only have to pay 85% of the increase that will see the minimum wage hike over the next 4 years to the eventual $10.10 an hour. So I wanted to get a feel for whether or not tipped employees on the coast feel like they got a raw deal in the minimum wage bill, and how these changes will help or hurt the coastal economy. Michael Minescu has lived off tips here on the coast for 35 years, and while he says he understands why small businesses fought so hard to keep wages the way they are, he doesn't think the decision is really going to impact his financial standing all that much anyway.
Brian, I don't think that would affect me or any other tipped employee at all. It's more or less for the little guy, because when I see my check, I mean, it's 3-0, so I make $3.63 an hour, and your tips knock it out. I am for it for the little guy because, I mean, if you're a McDonald's worker or something like that, I think it would work out great for them. But it doesn't affect me in the least.
Sure. I've talked to some people who are upset by this, but then I've talked to some other people who said, you know, sort of the same sentiments as of what you just expressed, was that, well, our checks didn't really, you know, amount to much anyway. I live literally on tips. What do you think the reaction is for people like you in the industry? Have you heard anything?
I mean, especially working a resort, I think my sentiments are reflected by everyone that's in this business, that you're in it for the tips. You you could, it's not you could care less, because you do have to do taxes at the end of the year. But it doesn't affect us at all, and I think we all feel the same way about it.
You know, when this debate is brought up, we hear about a living wage. You know, for people who do make just the minimum wage, $7.25, which, you know, in January it's going to be bumped up to $8, and by 2018 it'll be at $10.10. For those people living and just making that without tips, many of those people, if you look at current statistics, are actually treading the line between either just staying right above the poverty line or falling below it. For tipped employees, because you have, you know, the opportunity to make a bunch of money in a summer night, for instance, here in the resort, do you feel that same sort of struggle and that working in an industry such as this is providing you a proper living wage?
I think it is, even especially if you're in a year-round place, even being in a resort area. But we also get, there's cost of living raises that a lot of people get every year. And it seems to me that, you know, standard tipping, when I started bartending, and that was 35 years ago, you know, you got 10%, it was great. Now, normal is 15 to 18. A lot of people are tipping 16, 17. So every year it seems like a percentage point goes up 0.5%. So we get our raise, or at least I like to think we do.
Right. Another thing in the minimum wage bill that I found very interesting, especially when you look at Ocean City as a whole, of course you have the big restaurants and big bars that everybody sort of goes to at least once when they come down here. But then the rest of the town is sort of made up of these small mom-and-pop, small businesses, small bars, small restaurants, small nightclubs of sorts. And the one provision that sort of went in the 11th hour was that if an establishment makes less than $400,000 in a year, they are exempt from this minimum wage hike over the next 4 years. Do you think that's really going to make a big difference as far as small businesses here on the coast who were very worried about having to increase their payroll by 25, maybe 50% if this would have passed straight away?
Even if you have a small business down here, especially in the summertime, you're doing well. For the most part, most people do well. But I don't think the small business owner is hurt down here as much as it is in surrounding areas. It's like, say, not a resort area. Because for the most part, the small businesses down here have to make all their money between May and October. Mm-hmm. And everybody else makes it year-round.
You hear the conversation many times about tipped jobs, that these are not careers, that these are for young kids coming up and until they, you know, figure out what they want to be when they grow up or they finish school and things like that. You've been in this business for, as you said, 35 years. This is your career. What do you say to people like that who look at tipped jobs and hospitality jobs as non-career jobs?
Well, you hear a lot of times, even my own dad says to me at this day, and I'm 54 years old, he says, what do you think you're going to do when you grow up? But if you don't think this is a real job, get behind the bar, sling drinks, get on the floor, wait tables, deal with the public every day, and the public is 99% right, and you have to eat crow a lot of times. And if you don't think this is a career job, and you don't think there's decent money in it, and you think it's a dead end, try it one time and see what you feel about it.
That was Michael Minescu, a longtime tipped employee here on the coast, talking with me about the provisions in the minimum wage bill. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. We'll be right back.